You're listening to BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Very good morning. You're listening to Enterprise. I'm Frida Liu, and it's time for Aiming for Alpha. I'm speaking to Nelly Amira Lim from Priority Sky, and we're talking about bridging and the knowing and doing gap right here on BFM 89.9. Amira, Nelly Amira. I'll call you Nelly.
Okay.
Okay.
Nelly will be great.
What is this gap between knowing and doing?
Well, basically, a lot of people know what they should do, and a lot of people know exactly what they should do, but they don't do that. And that's what we call the knowing and doing gap.
Okay, why is it so?
Because because we have not really consciously decided on what it is that we want to experience or have or do in our life. And therefore, we say, yeah, you know, everyone tells us what to do and we should be doing it, and yet we don't do. Yeah, I think that's kind of like coined why there is a bridge. And I believe a lot of people are experiencing this today.
Okay. And is it, what's the difference between goals and outcomes? Is that also related to what you try to say here today?
Well, it is. To many extent, it is. It is related. What's a goal is something that we aim for. And what's an outcome, basically, is the result of what we are aiming for. And therefore, if you have a very well-formed outcome, basically, you will do whatever it takes to get there. But if you have a wish list, you know, like a goal, oh, I dream of this, I wish I had that, that's kind of like a weak prayer, you know.
A weak prayer.
Yes, it's a weak prayer. It's something that, you know, you say and you say all the time, but you don't get to do it. And that doesn't have power. And knowing, you know, contrary to what many people believe, knowledge is not power.
Knowledge is not power. What is then?
It is potential power. Until you put it into action, then that's true power. Because you can know a lot of things, but if you don't actually do anything about what you know, then, well, that's weak prayer.
Okay. And what are some examples of people that you work with when they've managed to bridge that gap?
Well, it can be very amazing. As you know, I do NLP certification program as well as a trainer certification program. So you can see people who walked in who have this extreme fear of stage fright. You know, it's, as you know, stage fright is also well known as one of the top three fear, beating death. Amazing, right? Beating death. Well, you can see them as they know what to do. They have all the skills. And what we actually help them do is to put them in a state where they can actually do it.
Okay. How do you get to that state?
Well, that's called state management.
State management.
Yes.
Okay.
That's state management. And state management is how do you put your mind and your body, okay, and your emotion to be aligned, to be congruent with exactly what you want to do. It's just like you know what it takes to do a great presentation. But to get there, basically, when you're there, that moment of decision or that moment that really is the one that's going to make the difference is only one word, your state.
Your state. Okay.
Yes, your state. You know exactly what to do. If you have a panic state while you're standing up there presenting, obviously, it's not going to be in a flow, and most people just run off the stage. When you have your state, then basically you can use whatever that you know.
Okay, so how do you get to that state? What are some of the steps?
Yes, there are basically three things that influence your state. The first one is your focus. So what do you constantly focus on? You know, when you go up in stage, sometimes you go like, oh my God, they're staring at me. That ain't going to help you at all. So it's very important what you focus on. If you could focus on how it's going to be your outcome at the end of the day, then you will be more empowered. Second is your language. What language you use? What are the words that you tell yourself? What are the language? Language is so important because you can say, for example, how are you today? And what's the habitual answer?
Fine.
Yes. And that's kind of like a habitual thing. So if you can change your language, if you can intensify your positive and positive languages and then de-intensify those negative languages, then obviously it's going to be affecting and influencing your state. Say, for example, one state, it's like, you know, I am lonely. Instead of saying I'm lonely, say I'm available, right? Isn't that more empowering? Would that change your state? Obviously. What about at work? Sometimes we say, oh, I'm so overwhelmed by my work. Well, yes, you are overwhelmed by your work. Instead of saying that, what about saying I'm in demand? Everybody wants me. That's even more amazing. Does that change your state? Yes.
Yeah.
So I know you are high demand. The third one is your physiology, how you carry yourself, your body. If you were to walk around hunched and looking down all the time, oh yes, looking down all the time, you obviously will feel that way. I mean, I would invite everyone to just give it a try. Look up and smile and think of a sad movie. I challenge everybody. It is quite ridiculous. You know, you will feel that it conflicts with your every cell of your body. So it is very important. So there are three steps that can influence your state. And the first one is the focus. The second one is your language. And the third one, your physiology.
So in this case, say I have stage fright. I walk into the room, I stand properly, I look up, and then I will focus on saying, I'll do a great job.
Yes.
I'm fantastic at this. So and that actually has an indication.
Yes, definitely.
And it's as simple as that.
Yes, it's as simple as that. So if you can manage your state, basically you are 80% to where you want to go.
Okay, and so when people understand that, do they really adopt it or do they go back to their old ways again?
Well, that's a very interesting question. You are so right. One thing about this technology, and I think with a lot of skills, is if you don't use it, you lose it.
Okay.
So definitely, if you know what to do and you don't do it, then it's not going to get you there. So that's why in NLP, what we do is we help them build the model of excellence for them. And at the same time, they will have the experience during the workshop or when in their peer group. And having that experience itself would then set beliefs that it can be done. So it is very important that you give the person an opportunity to experience it. That's why it's experiential learning. NLP is very much experiential learning. That you experience it and therefore you build beliefs.
Okay, so initially it may seem uncomfortable, not so natural.
Yes.
But then just keep at it and then it becomes part and parcel of who you are.
Yes, that's right.
All right. I'm speaking to Nelly Amira Lim from Priority Sky and we're talking about bridging the knowing and doing gap in our Aiming for Alpha segment on BFM 89.9. I understand you also use hypnosis as a tool. Now, how does it help in personal and professional development?
Yes, hypnosis. Hypnosis is one of the modalities in NLP. And hypnosis helps a lot because it helps you put you in a trance. Now, trance can be a scary word for someone, quote, unquote. But it is actually your most natural state. It is the way your mind works naturally. And so when you use hypnosis, you can do self-hypnosis. I think the most empowering thing to do is to do self-hypnosis.
Okay.
Yeah. And you can put yourself in a state where you're in a trance. Now, then you say, hey, Nelly, what's a trance? Sounds scary, right? Well, trance is the most natural state. So you are in trance. If you are not in trance for a day, I think you will be what we call the sugar high running around, right? You'll be jumping and hopping around. We all go in a trance. You know, have there been a time, Freda, where you are actually driving and then you realize you're at home and you don't even know what's in between? where you were from and when you arrive home.
When you're in autopilot.
Yes, that's right. And that's when you're in a trance. It's kind of a daydream experience. It's, in fact, a heightened sensory awareness of what's going on inside yourself.
Okay, so how does that then, okay, so you're saying that it's a tool and it's a very natural thing, and I guess the word trance frightens people thinking
yes.
that it's, you know, something else. So it's nothing to do with, it is something to do with mind control, and you can control your own mind basically.
Well, it is not really mind control, as in it is a natural state, so no one's really controlling your mind or you controlling your mind, but you are influencing or going into an inner journey within yourself to tap onto your unconscious resources that you have. We have a lot of hidden resources. That's a lot of what, who we are, that's within us, that needs to be harvested, that you can harvest that and to, in order for you to achieve what you want to achieve. So when you go into a trance, basically, you're giving suggestion. You know, imagine your conscious mind like a general, okay, in an army. And then your unconscious mind, which is all your whole battalion of soldiers. Now, if the general doesn't know how to direct all the soldiers, what's going to happen?
They're just going to be running around.
Yes, and that's what mostly happens to us when we don't know how to give instructions to our unconscious mind. The unconscious mind has only one directive, to fulfill all your every need. The question is, do you know what you want?
Okay. And what are the simple steps for hypnosis or self-hypnosis? And just give me the steps. Don't do it to me because I've got to do this interview.
All right. There are many ways for you to induce a trance. The one that's the most simplest, which I can think of right now, is basically what we call progressive relaxation. All you have to do is to tense your body from the top of your head all the way down to your toes. I mean, tense it up. Tense your face and make your face really tense. Now, if you're in a car right now, I would invite you to do this. It's okay because, you know,
you can't do this.
You can't do this while you're driving, except, you know, the drivers on the other side would think that, you know, okay, this is a creepy looking person. But, you know, I invite you to try this out, you know, just on your face. Just tense your face really, really hard right now. That's right. You just hold it for a few seconds and then just let it go. How does that feel like?
Okay.
Yeah. And then if you want to continue doing this, then you tense your shoulders and you go on to your chest, to your stomach area, all the way down, even to your buttocks and all the way down to your thighs and your legs and your toes. And you tense your whole body up and hold it for 10 seconds and then let it go.
BFM 89.9. The Business Station. You're listening to BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Okay, so what happens when you let it go?
When you let it go, you feel totally relaxed. And then what you need to do, because a lot of people, the entrance into hypnosis or into a trance is basically relaxation. And many a times during our workshop, we ask people, okay, take a deep breath and relax. And they go, I can't relax. So the easiest way to relax is to tense yourself up and then let it go. And they can immediately feel the relaxation.
Okay. What about in those TV shows when they do this pendulum and they say, look into my eyes. You know what happened? Is that different from this?
Yes, very much so. But we can always do that if you want to. But hypnosis and trance definitely has been sensationalized by Hollywood. And I don't know if it's giving a bad name or not, but it is definitely over-sensationalized. Being in trance and being in or experiencing hypnosis is actually giving power to yourself, not giving power to another person. It's about doing what you want to do because it's in you. Now, a lot of people ask me, yeah, but Nelly, you know, a lot of people run around in doing those shows, doing stage hypnosis shows. They run around like a, you know, like a chicken, or they sing, or they dance like Michael Jackson. I don't know about the singing, but definitely, you know, they start to dance like Michael Jackson. What's all that? And for me, you know, that's every part within us, there's one part within us that really want to do this. You know, has there been a time that you really want to freak out and not
dance like a chicken?
Yeah, okay. Dance like a chicken or dance like Michael Jackson. There's this part of us that needs to be unleashed and once given the permission.
Oh, okay. It's really what the person wants to do.
In fact, yeah, I don't want to go as much as saying everybody wants to dance like a chicken, but definitely there's some of us out here that feels like we need to let go. Yeah, not literally dance like a chicken, but being able to be childlike, not childish, but childlike.
Okay, yes. And just getting back to that, I guess when less worries were in your life, getting back to that stage in life. Right, okay.
Yes.
I'm speaking to Nelly Amira Lim from Priority Sky. We're talking about bridging the knowing and doing gap in our Aiming for Alpha segment. Of course, I'm trying to relate this back to work situations again. How does it help when, you know, you want to use this to, not so much doing presentations, how about creative thinking? How can you use this knowledge to help in creative thinking?
Okay, NLP and hypnosis, both, actually helps you to tap onto your right side of your brain, which is your creative brain. And definitely, if you are in the right state of mind, if you were curious and if you were playful, if you will be able to have fun while you're doing any creative work, obviously, you're going to have better results. The most important one, the distinctions you need to have about taking an activity is knowing what states you need to stack. What I mean by that is that for presentation, you might have a state of confidence, of flow. You know, flow, I guess, is very important. But for creative thinking, perhaps it's about playfulness. You know, of course, you can be seriously creative. Or you can be playfully creative. So it depends on the stage of your creativity when you're doing it, but definitely states is by all means the number one. Knowing exactly how you want to be, how you want to experience, then you go and do the necessary work. Then you will get the results. A lot of people go into creative thinking that, I have to be serious about this. This is a very important project. It has to get out by certain dates and you are, you know, you're stuck in that mode. How creative do you think you can be versus someone who is, you know, free from all that for that moment, of course.
Okay. So, and what about problem solving as well? How can you use that for problem solving in a work situation?
Okay. NLP has a lot to do with understanding structure, not just the content of what's happening. Most of the time, when we are looking at a problem, we tend to look at it at the level of the problem. So what's needed is a higher level of thinking in order for you to do problem solving. And NLP gives you the best tool in the sense that it shows you the structure, not only the content. Because a lot of people are caught in the content of a problem, if you know what I mean.
Okay.
Yeah. So you need kind of like to step out and see the structure of the problem. So these are the tools that are readily available in NLP to show you the difference between a structure and a content.
Okay. And what is the structure though?
Okay. Let me give you an example. If you are having, let's create or imagine a problem. All right. Let's say you're in a manufacturing company. And in a manufacturing company, you have some quality issues. And therefore, there's a lot of communication that's going around of saying, oh, you know, this is production issue. No, it's in process issue. No. It's actually, you know, the design. It came from the design. I'm sure this is all very familiar to everyone.
Yes. The marketing guy is promising the clients more than we can deliver.
Yes, that's right. As always.
Right.
Yeah. And so all this will go around. Now, when you approach a problem-solving state of listening to all this, this is important to listen to them, to listen to all this and not be caught in the emotion of it, but rather see the structure. What actually happens? So you actually step out and look at what are the causes and the symptoms, not just the causes, not just the symptoms, but the causes. So you can actually step out of it and then question it. So it's not so much of going into, oh, you know, this guy say this and this guy says that. And that's like getting into the content, the emotional, the energy and the dynamics of the problem. But being able to step out and see the structure.
Okay. Yeah. So when you see the structure, then you're able to question and look at things more objectively.
Yes, definitely.
And will you be able to communicate all this from a very objective aspect to all the different parties? How are you able to do that?
Yes, that's a very interesting question. Let me put it this way. When you've stepped out and you go, I know what's the cause of the problem or the source, what you need to do is you need to communicate to them in the way that they communicate. And that, again, is another modality of NLP. It's how do you use language to influence people to see your point of view?
Okay. So using language.
Yes, using language. Because some people, I'm sure you have this experience, or some of you out there might have this experience, where you hear two people arguing and one person will say, "You don't see my point." And the other person will say, "I understand what you're saying." And you say, "No, you don't see my point." And the other person say, "I do, I understand what you're saying." So as you can see, this conversation can go on for, you know.
It's going nowhere.
It's going nowhere, you know. It's going nowhere. And it will continue because of the language that they speak, of the way they process information in their mind. So how we process information or how we make sense of reality, it's the way who we are.
So in that example where two people are arguing and it's never ending, what sort of language can we use to help solve
the
challenge?
Basically, NLP advocates flexibility. So if you have the tools and you have the skill sets, what you need to do is basically to communicate in their language.
Okay.
Yeah. So if there's two people, if you are going to be the mediator, obviously you will turn around and say to the ones who say, "You don't see my point," explaining to the person, "Yes, he sees your point."
Because he's a visual person.
Yes, he's a
right.
visual person. So we have a lot of visual people in the world. And I mean, we all are all the above, the visual, the auditory, the kinesthetic, and the auditory, digital. I know all these sounds like jargons, and they are. They are specific language to explain your inner world. So yes, NLP is full of jargon.
So there's a lot that you can read up on, obviously,
yes.
And all that. So, okay, just a final question. Of course, you know, we can go on forever. But what are some of the simple steps a person can take in to bridge the knowing and doing gap? Is that, again, the three steps you talked about? Or just what can I take back from this and say, let me try practicing this at home now?
Okay. If I were to coin it, I would say there's, number one, you need to know what you want. And that's most important, knowing what you want, what's the outcome that you want. Number two is, of course, to take massive action. And you go like, "Yeah, Nelly, you just asked me, you know, bridging the knowing and doing gap." The point is you need to take the first step, whatever it may be for you. Once you know what you want, you know exactly what the first step is. Now, if you need to take that massive action and you can't, you need to find leverage. What's the pain and pleasure? And the third step is to have a sense, to heighten your sensory acuity. That means to actually see what works and what don't. Okay? And then the fourth one is to have behavioral flexibility. If you know what works and what don't, change. I think change is a very, very big word, right? Where was I? Yeah, so we are at the fourth step. And the fifth step is to operate at your best states. What are the states? Decide up front. What are the states most empowering for you to do a certain task at work? And the sixth one, the ever so famous, persistence. Yeah, be persistent till you reach your outcome.
Okay.
So there are six steps basically to master success, to master excellence in your life, to achieve whatever that you want to achieve in your life, to see your vision coming true.
All right. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
I've been speaking to Nelly Amira Lim from Priority Sky in our Aiming for Alpha segment on BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, the business station.